Alright, so today we have Michael Hott, and he's going to be giving a lecture on an application of GGT to algebra.
So, in case you don't know what GGT means, it means generic group theory, and I'm referring to a book or lecture notes by Clara Lerner. Those are really good, and I learned from those, and find some interesting stuff there. So what I'm doing today, what I'm presenting today is a famous theorem by Niels and Schreier. which says that subgroups of free groups are free. So first question, you guys know what a group is? But who doesn't know? You guys know what a subgroup is? You guys know what a free group is?
I don't know what a group is.
You don't know what a group is?
No.
Okay, that's easy. So a group is a set G with a relation we have an identity here, so G composed with E is equal to E composed with G is equal to G. We have the existence of an inverse. So now what is a free group? In general, we write groups using a set of generators and then defining relations between the elements. So what is the commutative group on two generators? How do you write that down?
You mean like just like Z mod 2Z?
Yeah, you see
that? Like Z mod 2Z?
No, it's like very easy. We have two generators. We call them, we call the generators, for example, I and J. And then we require that IJ is equal to GI. And that's how we would denote. And we can identify this with Z squared. All right, and so what is a free group? In simple words, it just means we write down any strings consisting of our generators, and we don't we cannot obtain a trivial element unless we write inverse elements next to each other. So these things will be trivial if I do this. But if I write something like this, I don't know anything. So that is the intuition for free group. And there's also a universal property that we're going to apply later, but I don't want you guys to focus on it right away. Just think of a group with no relation. So I want to prove this result, and if you want to do this using tools of algebra, that can be quite difficult. You have to, this is very technical. You have to get some machinery to prove this. But our idea is more intuitive in the sense that we will try to map these algebraic
objects, which are groups, to a geometric combinatorial object, which are graphs, and then try to establish results by intuition, and this intuition will then turn out to help us.
I got just one question. So you defined a free group, right? So you're treating this.
I didn't define it.
Oh, you haven't defined free group?
No, I just gave the heuristics for the free group. I haven't defined it. If I want to define it, I have to show the existence and.
I was wondering. So if you write down a relationship, how do you prove that it's normal, or do you take the normal closure of the other relationships? For example, I thought you defined G as the quotient group of the free group by the set of relationship.
What? No. A free group is a group that consists of words, a sequence of characters that have no relations.
Okay.
So it cannot shorten unless you have an element and its inverse next to each other.
Okay, and no relations?
There are no relations.
I'm sorry, I thought you already made relations.
No. Okay. But yeah, like in general, we can write a group as a free group modulo the relations.
Okay.
But that's not the point. All right, so the main result that we will use in order to prove this theorem is the following proposition. A group is free if and only if it admits reaction. Admits a free action on a non-empty tree. So let's start from the last word. Do you guys know what a tree is? Who doesn't know what a tree is? Okay. A tree is a connected graph in which we don't find any cycles. What is a cycle? A cycle is a closed path, which means we have the start and the end point are the same, such that the no edge is repeated. Okay, so we are not allowed to go back and forth. This wouldn't be a cycle. This wouldn't contradict the definition of the tree. So we actually want something non-trivial to happen in order to not have a tree. That is that. So we will define what a free action is. An action on a group. An action. Yeah, we will define what an action on a graph is. Give me just a sec. Intuitively, you push things around inside the graph, like you move vertices to other vertices. A very simple action here would just be rotate the vertices to each other. That's an example. All right. So given this, we can prove our theorem very easily. Let G be a free group. And F be a subgroup. She acts freely. On a non-empty tree. Due to proposition one. And And then F as a subgroup, also X freely. On the same tree. So with what does this say? We don't fix anything with so free action means nothing is fixed if we rotate. When do you have stabilizers? Think of S2 and think about the so think of the Earth. And the North Pole is a fixed point of the rotation of the Earth evolution. So that would be a fixed point of the one action. So if we don't fix anything with a bigger object, we don't fix anything with a smaller object. And then proposition one, the converse direction. Yields that F is free. Ta-da! So we would be done if this is all we have to prove, but like the essential step will be here, and here we will develop the tools of geometric group theory. Okay, so does anyone know what a k-graph is? Who doesn't know what a KD graph is? Okay, that's not non-empty, so let's find it. I mean, this object, the KD graph, turns out to be a very useful object, which also helps you, for example, classify. So it's not only useful for what I'm doing today, like that the K-graph itself got some research going and established some cool results. So we fixed G and SP generating set. Do we have to emphasize what a generating set is? It just means you obtain any element in G by composing elements of S or their inverses. We define the KD graph. K of G with respect to S to be the graph bit given by the vertices and the edges, with the vertices being the set G itself as a set, not as a group. And E is all elements all subsets GGS of G, where G is a vertex and S is a generator, a non-trivial generator. So what does this additional restriction mean? It means that we don't want an edge to a vertex itself. Still very easy. G What does the Kelly graph look like now? So z is an axis, just like an axis.
Connect everything with, you know, two.
So we connect every twos
and all threes as well.
Exactly. So, yeah. So on and so forth. And then the threes. And if you look closely, we have connected everything. So we can go from everywhere to everywhere. And so we are actually generated. So one feature that I will mention already, this would be the, this is a generating set. Like the Kelly graph looks like this. What would be nice is to say we want certain features to not depend on the generating set S. If I take a generator 1, then my Kelly graph would look like this. And now the idea of a so-called quasi isometry is that if you look from very far away, these objects look the same. And but I'm not going into that. That is the topic itself, but just to give you a flavor of GGT. Cool. So yeah, what we do here? Should I write here or just go over there?
Probably stick to that wall.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on you guys. I want to have as much as possible. So on the board, for example, okay, I can write this right over there. Any questions so far? I mean, I just wrote down some definitions. Barely proved anything. Cool. So, let's define. Free action. I could define what a free action on a graph is, but we don't have to, so general. So we define a group action. Of G on itself by what is one of the easiest actions one can have on a group?
Left operation.
What
the easiest one is do nothing.
Okay, that's actually not actually or something non-trivial.
Okay.
Multiplication.
Yeah, exactly. So let's take the left, another one is conjugation. combination of, and depends on the context, what is a useful action, but we're considering the multiplication. So LG is the map which sends H to GH. This induces an isomorphism, a graph isomorphism. I will tell you what it is. On K G S via. So I will denote the action by lowercase dot, and sometimes I will not even write that. To be LG of H, which is G of H,
rho H and G.
So we just shift all the vertices, and we want edges to shift as well. So something that was connected before should stay connected afterwards. So the only useful definition is that we connect the shifted for all edges.
Is that an H prime?
Sorry. It's just two different elements.
Oh, okay.
H prime, H tilde, name, take, yeah.
Got it.
Mama, Papa, whatever. So this action. Is set to be free. If for all G, we have that for all H in G, we don't shift the vertex on itself, so we don't stand still. And the other property is so for all edges, we have that the shifted. So now consider this as a set is not equal to the set G G H prime. So I say this already because there are two scenarios that either we shift, either we have the shift the edge to the edge with the same direction, or we could invert it. Like you could see the direction here from H to H prime, or backwards. That's probably the only possible. We will see this later. So we don't want this to happen. So we don't want the edge to, so we don't want the edge to be shifted on itself, or its inverse. So the other edges.
Okay.
So write down the second proposition before we prove our proposition one. Three actions on k-graphs. Let G be a group. S be a generating set. Then the above described action on the k-graph is free if S does not contain an element of order 2. So in here we have directions. So group is, so the order is the smallest number k such that g k times composed with itself is the other entity. Okay, so proof. Okay, so we have that GH equal to H for some H implies that G is equal to E. So GX, I'm proving given that so GX freely itself this is always the case so freely as a and what happens with the edges? Assume G composed with the A edge is mapped onto itself. So then we have two cases. Either GH is equal to H and GH prime equal to H prime. Then we obtain the G-weighting identity. The second case is that GH H is mapped onto H prime, and H prime is mapped onto H. Then we have that H and H prime are connected by an edge, which means that we can write H as H prime composed with a generator S. Some S. Not being the identity, and then we obtain that H prime, which is equal to GH, which is equal to G square, which is equal to, so H is equal to H prime S, so GH prime S, and then H, GH prime is equal to H, and H is equal to H prime S, so H prime S squared, and this implies S squared is equal to the identity. So we have proved that if the action is not free, then S has an element of order 2, so we have proved the converse direction. And the other direction should be easy. So if not this, and not this, take just this step backwards, and then we have have an edge that is mapped onto itself. So we don't have a free action. So we also proved the other direction. Now let's prove our main theorem, or our main proposition in this case. Let F be a group, freely generated by. Then the Kelly graph is a tree. So what is the intuition? If it were not the case, then we would have a non-trivial cycle. And if we follow the the edges, then this yields us a non-trivial relation between the elements, which would mean that we have our group was not free. Okay. So assume. So now we want to employ our proposition two. Assume S contains an element of order 2. So S squared is equal to the identity, and S is not itself the identity. Then we can define a map phi from the generator to Z, where we send. Where we in particular send this element S to the number 2, for example. And so now comes the universal property. So the universal property says that if we start with a map from S to subgroup G, then there is a unique extension. This is the inclusion map. Then there is a unique extension phi to the entire group F, such that this diagram that I can use. We extend this map to a homomorphism capital phi. And thus we have that 4 is equal to capital phi of S squared, which is equal to phi of S squared due to there being a homomorphism. But S squared is the identity, and the identity has to be sent to 1 because we have a homomorphism, which is a contradiction. So this gives us that we didn't have an element of order 2 in the first place, and then proposition 2 yields that the action of F on the K graph. I'm not going to show the converse direction because it's a little bit more technical. Well, not technical. It's just tedious to write down, but you can go through the proof very easily with the instruments that I've already taught you.
Can a finite group produce a reaction? Can a finite group produce a reaction?
The K graph.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's enough.
No, I mean finite group, finite
question, I have two questions. Question two is, what if you had, like, in the proposition, what if you had, like, Zmon 3?
What?
What if you had, like, Zmon 3?
Where?
In proposition 2, Zmon 3 doesn't contain an element of order 2, and so therefore no generator set will, but its action can't be free because it's finite. The Zmon 3, the group Zmon 3.
Yeah, the whole thing.
And if you consider its action on a scalar graph, it can't be free, it's finite. But it doesn't contain the element of order 2. So
No, that's not an objection because the scalar graph is a cycle.
Yeah, it's not a tree.
Yeah.
No, I know, but that means that, like, in your proposition, I think it should be order greater than input 2.
Wait,
Zmon
3?
Or, like,
2 squared?
Like
two squared is 1.
Is it about
3? Yeah.
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 That's like, wait.
I don't know. Okay, yeah. That's right. I don't think that someone does an actual course on that. Yeah, it's something that you can, as a grad student, do with other projects. I mean, there are other grad students I know of that has had a course on that.
Let's see. Have you read the book? Was it Office Hours of the Geometric Group Theorists?
No.
Okay.
That has to do with me being an analyst and having not too much interest.
So what compelled you to present on this?
Hmm?
What compelled you to present on this?
Okay, so the problem with analysis is that to do analysis properly and on an interesting level and not doing integrals, which I don't consider interesting, I have to require much more background, and since you guys don't know epsilon delta, and everything is much easier to write down with epsilon delta, I guess, especially when you want to interchange quantifiers and definitions, and take longer definitions, try to intuitively understand what equite continuity means of family. I can tell it's very difficult because it means something like for all epsilon greater than 0 exists a since the delta greater than greater than 0 such that for all elements in the I can't even write it down the L. If the elements have in the
is it like they're all continuous, but like the same epsilon and delta will work for all of them in the family?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That doesn't for me truly. So anyway, so because that is harder to understand, and I didn't want to do a boring stuff. I thought that I could present you something that you could understand with all the and if you're interested in analysis or some math physics with the tools on analysis, then I'm happy to present on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All
right.